What's going on, everybody? We're back for the Real Bodybuilding Podcast, episode number 29. I'm with my man, Dominic Cardone. Dominic, what's up, man?
What's up, Fuwa? Thank you for having me, dude.
I want to have you on because you have become a prominent figure in the bodybuilding community in the coaching realm. But I also know that you have a crazy physique. So I have a lot of questions for you about that and your coaching. And I want to get into some X's and O's because there's a lot of guys out there that don't know what they're doing. So
ooh, yeah, let's talk about everything.
So the first thing I want to get into is just your competition and like where you turn pro, how you turn pro, how long you keep competing, how old you are. Cause I know you're still a young guy, right?
Yeah. I'm 26.
Yeah. So you still got you're just kind of getting started.
Yeah. In all realm, we're definitely getting started. So just give everybody a little background and you know, what I've done and how I got started. So I basically started training at 15. I was playing football. I played football all my life. And then going into my sophomore year, I discovered YouTube. And that's when YouTube was first getting started. Mm. And I discovered Ronnie Coleman and Jay Cutler. And I already loved training. A month into training for my sophomore year, I was in love with it. And I was always a big research guy, either it be football, when I used to skateboard when I was a kid. I always like to research and dig myself in online.
Yeah.
So I just dug myself in, started discovering more bodybuilders. And a few months in, I'm like, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to bodybuild one day. And I first competed when I was 16. Mm-hmm. I did the MPC Metropolitan, just Steve Weinberger's show. Right. I won the teen class. I actually beat a 19-year-old. I placed fifth in the open light heavyweight, fourth in the novice light heavyweight. Did the Easterns when I was 18. Won the novice class there. Won the teens there. And placed fifth in the open class, which actually Mark Rivera was in that class. Mike Yablon. Few good guys. Did team nationals, won the heavyweight class, lost the overall to team to Cody Montgomery. That was 2012. And then I took some time off. And then 2014, when I was 21, I did the Easterns. And again, I only did Bev shows. Easterns, I won the overall. And 2 weeks later, I went to nationals in Miami. Yeah. And I won my pro card. I won the heavyweight class.
And that's when I first started seeing you was that those last two shows. Because I remember seeing this kid and going, holy fuck, look at the size of his legs. That was the one body part that I was like, this kid's not 21 years old. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, dude, my legs always carried me throughout. My upper body is always behind, but it's funny. I tell the story to everybody. And it's hard to believe, but my first leg workout ever was, my first workout ever was legs.
Yeah.
And I couldn't walk for days. It was so bad. I remember my mom was like flipping out. She didn't know what was going on, but I loved it. And a few days after, you started seeing my teardrop develop. Outer sweep, and I was only 15.
Yeah.
And from then I loved training legs, but yeah, my legs always carried me, dude. I always just love fucking getting under heavyweight, squatting and whatnot.
But so is that, so before we go on with other stuff, since we got on that, what is your recipe for, what's your recipe for legs? Is it a genetic thing with you, or do you have an actual recipe that will like get guys' legs to grow?
So it is genetics for me. I mean, my dad even competed after I started competing. His legs is his biggest body part. Legs runs in our family. But we also fucking crush it in the gym like how you're supposed to crush legs. I mean, to give everybody a rundown of what I did all the way up until, you know, I didn't really stop competing until my break. It was always leg extensions to failure. Go to the squat rack, and I was squatting. The most I squatted was 6 plates and a quarter each side for 8. And then I would do that, and I would do like a quadruple drop set.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to hack squats or leg press, go to failure in that.
Yeah.
And then I'll go to hamstrings and then calves either before or after. But that was every week. Squatting was always my number one go-to, dude.
So it's funny, when you say that workout, most guys are going to go, well, big deal. You just did leg extensions, squats, and hack squats. Those are three exercises. But what you're not describing is you're going to failure on like 4, 5, 6, 7 sets, or are you going to failure on one set at the end, or what are you doing?
No, dude, on leg extension, we get a couple warm-ups in, and then 2 to 3 sets would be the failure. I mean, my legs would be fucking swollen after all that.
Yeah.
And then I'm pretty well ready to go, and then we go into squats. So, for instance, like a squat set, my favorite squats, I missed doing it, was the bar for 20, a plate for 20, 225 for 15 to 20, 315 for about 12, 4 or 5 for 10 to 12, 5 plates for 8 to 10, and then to the 6, and then to the 6 and a quarter, which is almost 10 reps every time. And then take a break, a couple minutes, do the 6 plates and a quarter again for whatever I could, and then do a triple or quadruple drop set. And every set was fucking all the way down, all the way up. I do admit it was a little too ballistic, and we'll get into my back injuries and all that whatnot. Yeah. But that was fucking all out failure. And then you go into either leg press, a hack squat, build up, and then that last set would be failure.
Yeah.
And then it's a little bit of hamstring. But it was all about the intent. It was all about intensity and intent in every set.
So I guess you could say you don't necessarily prescribe to the thought process that you need so many different exercises to build legs. You just need to focus on the ones that work.
100%. Because I think people get so caught up in, and I think you would agree with this, with all these different exercises and all these different techniques, all you have to do is find a couple movements that really work for you. And usually they're the most basic ones.
Yeah.
And get really strong with them, train with value with them, get the technique down perfect. And the main thing is fucking intensity. You see people, like, they're afraid to go to failure. Yeah. They're afraid to push themselves beyond that limit. I mean, I don't have to tell you. And that's, aside from genetics, I mean, that's really accelerated the growth of my legs. And see people today too, nobody really trains legs as they should, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have to tell you, fucking, you're a leg freak.
Yeah.
That's why we don't really see too many big legs on stage that are like wow anymore. You see some decent ones, but nothing like that's too wowing.
I don't, I see a lot of pros squatting a lot of weight, but I don't necessarily see guys squatting a lot of weight or necessarily leg pressing or hack squatting for tons of reps. That's kind of what I don't see. I don't see the, you know, hack squatting 7 plates and then dropping to 6, 5, 4, 3 and doing that all out drop set where you're kind of crushing it to the very end. I know there's some guys doing it, but you're right. It's not a common thing anymore.
No. And that's the one thing I was like, my first coach is Factory Mubarak.
Yeah.
And, you know, his resume speaks for itself. And he was a very old school type of guy with the training. He taught me how to train heavy and with volume.
Yeah.
You know, people get so caught up in, okay, too many reps, too many sets. If you're eating and you're taking gear and you're sleeping, then you pay attention to recovery. And that's how you gauge things. But you really got to push things beyond the fucking limits to really get things to go, especially legs. We don't want to look normal. You don't want to look okay. You don't want to look just like, eh. You want to step on stage like, wow. And that's, in my opinion, how to create that look. And that's how I was taught. It's heavy with volume, failure, and beyond, and just learn the proper techniques and how to recover from all that too.
Do you think that same methodology applies to other body parts? Because I don't know if – I don't – personally feel like you can do the same thing to like chest that you can do to legs.
No way, because I did the same thing for chest all through that time period. And my chest was always one of my weakest body parts. It was always very shallow. Form wasn't the best. My shoulders took over, but I did the same thing and it just didn't get it done. For me personally, what I figured out over the last few years, well, 2015 going to 2016, when I last competed in New York Pro, we'll get into that. But even now with my comeback, is chest, you can't take all that. It's not a big body part, but your legs. It's not going to be a recovery. Your joints are going to be fatigued. Your shoulders, your elbows are going to kick in. Your triceps are going to get fatigued. And how's your chest supposed to recover from all that? You really can't. And arms are the same way too. You can't pummel them with all that. First of all, I don't really like training arms with heavy. Too moderate weight's good, but heavy, there's no reason. The volume needs to be there. Back could be trained with heavy and hard, but you know, things like delts and chest, it's just going to be too, you're going to be putting yourself in the negative. That's what I did for years. And my chest was very shallow when I turned pro.
I feel like when it comes to arms, moderate weight works. When it comes to chest and back, you can go heavy, but the volume can't be the same as legs. Legs seem to be the, like quads seem to be the only body part where you can go heavy and high volume. And that's the perfect recipe for them. Cause I see guys, some guys use a ton of weight, but not a lot of volume and their legs just don't look that big and round.
I agree. Well, think it's that big round, exactly, that volume, this big round look that you're talking about that a lot of people lack, and the detail too. The detail comes from the type of training I feel as well.
Yeah. So you turned pro at 21.
Yeah.
And then you did, what did you do after that? Because I know you've been on a break. Did you compete after that or did you take a break after that?
Yes. So I took a little break and then I competed. So just to give a rundown, that's going to be leading to a whole other story. So I did the New York Pro 2016.
Okay.
I had my off season 2015. I got to 270, 275. I wasn't lean or anything. Chris Cedar was doing my diet. Oscar Arden, I was training with Oscar Arden. It was going great, dude. I mean, everything was clicking. Everything was good. 6 weeks out, I was 249, and I was a couple weeks away from being ready. I was at my biggest and leanest ever. Knowing my body, once I hit a certain weight, I only lose like 5 more pounds after that and a couple of pounds of water, I'm ready. So I probably would have been on stage around 235, 240. Knowing my body and what they were saying. So 6 weeks out, I had the pictures. I look back at them like, holy fuck, if only I was 100%.
Yeah.
But my mom went into a coma at 6 weeks out. She was battling leukemia since 2015 or 2014. And basically, she was supposed to die that night. But she lasted 3.5 weeks. So those 3.5 weeks, I was still, Oscar was actually bringing my meals to the city. Me and my dad and my brothers were rotating the hospital because she was in the ICU. So we couldn't leave her alone. We didn't trust the doctors. We always watched over her. So doing everything in Manhattan, I was training. Oscar's coming to train Manhattan, bringing my meals. I would run home, see my dogs, go back, up for 30 hours at a time. Every day was a roller coaster. She was supposed to die every day. Fucking kidney failure, AFib, throwing everything you could imagine, just up and down. And then we see a little bit of light, something fucking happened. So that was a true stress. But, you know, I still ate my meals. I was still training the city right nearby the hospital. My dad was telling me to still do it. He said, your mom's still going to want you to do it. And then she died around 3 weeks out. So
I'm sorry, dude.
Well, it's all right, dude. You know, it was a big learning experience. And but I remember saying to my dad, I'm like, I don't even think I should do a show. He's like, listen, he goes, you're not going to be near your best. He goes, your mom wanted to do your first pro show. Just do it. And I sort of was going through his motions. But the day after New York Pro, I was 206 pounds after all the food and water ate. Mind you, I turned pro at 223.
You were 206 pounds?
The day after the show, dude.
How'd you lose so much weight?
So in the hospital, I guess it was just starvation, the cardio, the stress. I lost a ton of muscle. And then two, the last week, there was way too much diuretics. I don't blame Chris because when you looked at my body, you didn't know which end was up and which way was down. My body was just a fucking mess, dude. I still had some fat on me. I was a watery mess. So we did a lot of diuretics and I was like 225 a week out, which still was very stringy for me in that phase compared to when I turned pro.
Yeah.
And dude, I lost a lot of weight that week and there was just no coming back from it.
I'm surprised you kept going, man.
Yeah, you know what it is too? That's just how they raise us. And I was still, I don't want anybody to take the wrong way of how I'm saying this. I was still in the hospital. I wasn't taking time away from my family. I was still by each other's side. But you know, my dad wanted me to finish it. She would have wanted me to finish it. And I did. You know, it was a big learning experience, actually. I don't regret that I did it, even though I look like shit. Mm-hmm. I just learned a lot. I learned a lot about the people around me. I learned a lot about my mental state, my mental fortitude, and a lot about my body, too. You know, how stress and all that stuff. So it was a big learning experience for me, you know. And then I haven't competed since.
Yeah. In 2006, my dad died of a heart attack, and I was 11 weeks out from my first pro show.
Oh shit! I'm
and,
sorry.
No, it's fine now. I mean, it's been a long time. He just died of old age. He was 80 years old. But I remember feeling kind of the same way your dad felt, the way he said to you, like my family was kind of like he would want you to keep doing it. He would want you to go ahead. He would want you to finish. I actually learned how to kind of channel that energy. I mean, for you, it was probably too close to the show to channel any kind of energy, and you were going through a lot with the coma and all that, but. For me, because his death was sudden, I was able to take that energy and channel it into the prep. It's probably the best I ever looked. It didn't really hit me that he was gone until the show was over. Once the show was over, I was kind of like, holy shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're kind of in like another place.
Well, that's what happened to me.
Yeah. I think I used it to block out the fact that he had passed away.
It was like a Band-Aid in a way.
Yeah, yeah. And then when the show was done, I was like, holy fuck, you know, it actually happened. Like, I have to actually deal with it now. So I guess it's interesting how things can either cripple us or we can use them to our advantage. I guess it's a testament to your mental strength that you're able to keep going and go through with it. Because I don't think a lot of people would have been able to.
No, so. I mean, especially the stuff that, you know, everybody's different. You know, I don't want to say I don't want to put out there that somebody's weak if they don't finish. I encourage anybody to follow what they say, you know. I just have to, like, put a little disclaimer on things.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still pushed through. It was a bit hard to channel the energy because my energy was always high. And those last 3 weeks were sort of just, like I said, I just went through the motions. But it still didn't hit me. Like, same thing as you. And then after the show, I was able to breathe. And then a month went by. I'm like, okay. And then 2 months went by. And then it really started to hit me.
Yeah.
And that just snowballed for a long time. And I stopped training. Mm. And I just stopped paying my bills. And I was drinking. I didn't have a drinking problem. But I didn't realize I was drinking more than I should have been. And until I started seeking out help and whatnot, a therapist, and started talking things out and not holding these things in, that's when I realized what I was doing and where I was going. And it took me some time to heal from that, dude. And people ask why we were out so long. Finances, my mental state and finances.
Can I interrupt you for 1 second though? Because you had a break. Because you had a break. You said you competed in 2016, but you turned pro in 2012.
No, I turned pro in 2014.
Oh, okay. So you only had like a year off, and then year and a half, and then you started prepping. Yeah,
year and a half. Oh, and that's right too. I was still living with my family when I turned pro, okay. And our house burned down.
Holy shit!
March 2015. Yeah, that was a whole other thing, and then that's when I went on my own and all that stuff. So, but yeah, I had a small break in between.
Okay. So after a couple months went by, you kind of hit you, and you went through a drinking phase, or were you still bodybuilding, or were you just like fuck it all for a little while?
I said fuck everything for a while, dude. Yeah. I said fuck it. I wasn't bodybuilding. I wasn't even training. It was a training here or there. Mm-hmm. I was just so lost for a while, and this went on for a while because I don't want to make it seem like I had a drinking problem because I didn't.
No, it's okay.
Drinking on the weekends a lot, sometimes on the weekdays, at night with friends. And after a while, I realized, okay, what the fuck am I doing here? This isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. Seeked out some help. 2017, things started to get in somewhat motion for me. And I was going to do the Ferdinand Classic. I would start training like July 2017. And then September hit 2017. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm living bill to bill, week to week. I'm putting all my money into this. And what will be the outcome? That I do this show and maybe I get a little more status? What if I'm not at my best? Mm-hmm. So then I tried to join the Army.
All right. I'm following you.
So my two brothers that year, they both enlisted in the Army. One's an infantryman, one's a tanker, and now he's going EOD. So you know what? This is something I always wanted to do. I'm like, you know, take a little break for things. I could always come back to bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And I had a hand tattoo, which I should have never got. My mom was always against tattoos, but I was going through that phase. And they said, no neck, no hands, no face. So I spent 5 months removing the tattoo, which was very expensive, very painful.
Yeah.
I got into running and stripping off some muscle and all that good stuff. And then December 2017, he was like, I checked in with him every week, the recruiter.
Okay.
And I remember the last time I checked in, and he got nasty as fuck with me.
Why?
You can't be rushing this. You have until you're 34. You can't be doing this every week. I'm like, you told me to check in with you every week for whatever reason. And no, I don't have until I'm 34. I'm trying to get my life going now. And at that point, I'm like, what the fuck do I do here? And then Joe Bailey comes to me, and the coaching was always a side thing for me throughout the years. I never had this vision of it being a business. I never had this vision of being this.
Were you coaching people all along, like all through this time?
Yes, but I only had a few clients. I didn't have many people. It was just a side thing. I posted it here or there.
Yeah.
And I always loved it, but I never thought I could really do anything with it, you know? Actually, my first client was my dad when I was 16.
Okay.
And that's how I really got into it. And I always researched, always liked to learn. But through this time, I was coaching people here and there. And that was sort of how I was keeping my head in the industry just a little bit, you know?
Yeah. So Joe comes to you.
So Joe comes to me. Now, one thing, Joe, he went through the same thing with his mom as I did. Mm-hmm. Same exact thing. And I've been with Joe AD since 2015. And throughout this whole time, he was very, very supportive. And he comes, he goes, listen, he goes, I know, I understand what you're going through. He goes, we're going to have to reconfigure things business-wise. He goes, so let me earn my way back into AD a little bit. He goes, Dom, he goes, you're a really good coach. He goes, why don't you see if you could do this as like a full-time thing? And I'm like,
so can I want to interrupt you again. So for those of you,
as much as you want.
For those of you who don't know, Joe Binley?
Joe Binley,
So Joe Binley is the owner of AD, is it AD Nutrition?
Project AD, Anabolic Design.
Project AD. Okay. So it's a supplement company. Were you with them at the time or was he coming to you as a new endeavor?
I was with them since August 2015. So,
oh, okay. So you're already on board with them.
So throughout all this time period that I wasn't doing shit,
you
understood though, and he, you know, he helped me along. He supported me in all ways you could imagine.
Yeah.
And then he gave me that tough love. Instead of dropping me, he gave me that tough love and said, okay, let's get it going. I understand what you're going through, but let's get it going. And here's some tips and here's some advice to get your life in order again.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. So he gave you a push and then you decided. So why didn't you decide, okay, the Army thing is gone and he wants you to try the coaching thing, but why weren't you thinking to yourself, I want to get back on stage?
I had like no money to my name. So that was number one. Number two, I'm starting to think about my future. I'm like, I could put all my money into competing like I was, or I can start thinking about number one, my mental state, Number two, my financial present and future at the time. And then I'm revisit this. And yeah. that's what I started doing. And I got more into the coaching and it grew very, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the clientele came and obviously people, I always had people winning as a side. It was always, like I said, it was always a side thing. Yeah. People were winning, but I never expected it to get to the level it is now. And I fucking love what I do, dude. You know, yeah. people look at it like a business and they call themselves entrepreneurs. But when I look at it, I truly like helping people. I don't like just coaching competitors. I really do like helping people and those that follow, because I was in a lot of these people's shoes before as a teenager and then coming up and turning pros. So that's where my whole passion comes from, is helping these people and helping them achieve their goals. And when they win, I win. So, you know, I'm very thankful for everything Joe did for me, and everything that led up to all this was a big learning experience, and everything happens for a reason.
So it's been 3 years now and you're still on board with Project AD. Mm-hmm. And you're actually a very successful coach. How many clients do you have now?
So at the peak last year, I had 126, and that was too much.
How do you fucking deal with 126 clients?
Dude, at the time, I was sitting in my house day in and day all day, all night. I was barely leaving my house. I wasn't training really last year.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, okay, this is just like too much. I was able to keep up with it because
yeah.
I love it. I never want somebody to feel they're not getting what they paid for. I don't ever want anybody to feel like they're slighted, because I know what that feels like. But at the moment, there's 83. It's still a lot, but
for that's me, still dude, crazy.
It's a lot, dude.
Like I think at my, like, I mean, I've always done it with competing, but at the peak I had like 30 or 40 and I was like, this is crazy. I can't deal with 30 or 40. But maybe if I was doing it full time, like it's your full time thing. Are you still doing other things?
No, that's my full-time thing. So that's another thing I left out. So all my life, on and off, I did decorative concrete work for my dad. He had us working very young.
Okay.
So after New York Pro, I was working with him for a while just to make sure I paid my bills and all that. All the way up until March of last year, when the clientele really started kicking up, I realized, okay, I can't do anything else.
Yeah.
And I stay home. I work from home. I make sure I handle all my clients correctly and yes, yeah. I do full time. So handling all of those people for me isn't a problem, because I'm just by my phone all the time. I'm by my computer all the time and I'm back into training. So it's easy for me, you know?
Do your clients call you on the phone? Do they have your phone number?
They have my phone number, but they text me. They can text me and voice note me whenever they want.
So your rules for them are, you can text me, you can voicemail me, but you can't call me?
They can call me if it's urgent. Because the thing is, if you leave that door open to
80, I know.
Dude, next thing you know, you have people calling you to ask you what they could eat at dinner.
I know.
They're out. But you know, the thing is, too, with the texting, I always have my phone on me.
Yeah.
I tell them if I don't answer right away, I'm probably in the middle of something, but yeah. I answer as soon as I can. So,
yeah.
You know, voice notes, text message, unless it's really urgent, like maybe like something medical or something way out of the blue,
yeah.
Then they know to call me, which, you know, like I said, the response time for all that, they don't mind with the no
point. See, I came up in a time when it was all email. Like when I worked with Chad Nichols, I don't think I ever spoke to Chad on the phone. I don't think I even had his phone number until I was like a day out from a show. So
it's funny you say that, because I worked in 2014.
Yeah.
And that's who I turned pro with. And even then, like, texting was like barely anything. No. And I got a little scared. I was trusted, but I got scared at times because I worked with a few coaches and it was all through email.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, here's your plan. You look great. He would never compliment me.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote the email. Okay, I just follow the plan and check in what he says, and there's no texting. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
We got a little closer to the show than we texted here or there. But
yeah, no, but I think he started to realize that time is passing now and other coaches are doing the texting and the phone calls and stuff. So he opened up a bit, but I worked with him back in 2006. And at that time, nobody was texting. Nobody was calling. It was all done through email. Unless you were like, you know, obviously you probably talked to Ronnie Coleman on the phone, right? But like all his other clients were probably just like email only. So that's the way I kind of do it with my clients, is I don't have the texting thing going on with my clients, but I'm on my phone all the time anyway. I get my emails, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't, I always feel the way you, like what you said was, if I give them my phone number to text, I start getting shit like, can I have ketchup with my eggs? And can I, you know what I mean? And I'm like,
yes. See, for me, since I do it full time, like questions like that, I always tell them, if they're a good client to listen, I'd rather you ask than assume. If you assume, they're going to make an ass out of yourself, my dad always told us. So that's why I tell them. But, you know, if, like, I'm also a very direct person.
Yeah.
And I always tell them, listen, I'm very direct. I'm very respectful. So if somebody is abusing it with crazy, stupid. I tell them, listen, you know, I shut up. But listen, all due respect is X and X, you know, however they want to take it, they want to take it. But I always set those guidelines up front, and usually everybody is cool with it. But, you know, the questions of like the ketchup on eggs and or weird shit like that, you know, it's just.
So you seem like a really like straight up, no bullshit kind of person. Do your clients,
that's a thing too.
But I want to ask you, do your clients ever take it? Like, are they ever, do they ever take it in a bad way? Like, oh, maybe he's not nice to me. He doesn't like me. He's not coddling me enough. Like, do you get that kind of shit? Or do people appreciate your, like, just straight up attitude?
So most appreciate it because I just tell them as is. Like, I was coached by Chad. You know how Chad is. They don't give no compliments.
No.
I was coached by all the top coaches, and they were always very direct at me.
Yeah.
And that's how I want to be with them. And that's how I always wanted to be. People wanted to be me, so I'd be with them. Because if I sit there and bullshit them or coddle them, what good is it for them? It's not going to do anything for them. So you do get the people here or there that are like, oh, I feel like I'm afraid to text you. I'm like, why? Oh, you come off a little standoffish at times. I'm like, no, I'm just direct. You know, I have no reason to get nasty with somebody unless they give me a reason. They'll know if I'm being nasty, you know. And then there's like, for instance, I have this thing. If I know somebody's not following a plan and they pay me, I'll be, all right, you know, maybe it's somebody, a fat loss client, right?
Yeah.
I said, send me a picture of your cardio screen when it's done every day. Text it to me. So here's things that either happen. Either they magically get leaner. These are the things too. I do a full time. I like to push people, but if they show me over and over that they don't want to comply, then goodbye. You waste your time. Yeah. You waste my time. Goodbye. But I will try to push them for a while.
Yeah.
This is one of the things I do. So send me the picture of your cardio screen when you're finished. I want to see the whole thing. The calories, the level, all that stuff. So the two things happen. They either get leaner.
Yeah.
Two, maybe nothing's happening. I got to evaluate something else. Or three, they either stop answering me and they go the other way. Or like, for instance, somebody blew up like 2 months ago. I don't understand. You're supposed to trust me.
No.
I'm disrespected by this and that. Even though we have time together, I'm going to go another way. It's like, I didn't get nasty. I said, just send me a picture of the cardio screen, man.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I like to be very upfront.
I would just be honest. I'd be like, I don't trust you. But like, you're not losing any weight. Something's not right. And I need to make sure you're doing everything I tell you to.
That's exactly how I talk to people. And, you know, people that know me know I mean it in the most genuine and non-disrespectful way. I'm just very upfront. Right. If somebody comes to me and they want to get ready for a show, I say, okay, let me see your pictures. Let me see if you're able to be competitive in the show. And I'll tell them, you know, maybe you need off-season time.
Yeah.
X, Y, and Z, whatever. I like to be very upfront because I don't want to sell somebody a dream.
Yeah.
It's not here to do that. I'm here to make people their best as long as they want to be their best. And that's it. If you sit here and coddle people, compliments, and accept their bullshit, then what good is it for them? You know, they're paying me to get them to where they want to be, and that's part of what I have to do.
Yeah. So you mentioned something about a back issue. What was that about, and when did that happen?
So all those years of squatting, deadlifting, all that weight, I never had any issues. So 2016, I stopped really training. I was training very on and off since then.
Yeah.
I lost a lot of muscle. So last June, I was like, okay, I'm going to get back into training. I was feeling good. Started training. My back started getting really tight. I also stopped working for my dad. So I'm sitting at a desk day and night, all crazy hours of the night. My back starts getting tight. So I'm like, okay. So I tried training. Maybe I shouldn't train. July comes. It starts turning into a sharp pain. Mind you, I wasn't really doing anything. Maybe I was riding my motorcycle. Maybe that made it worse. I don't know. So mid-July comes. It gets to the point where I can't move, dude. I look like an old person, 90-year-old person that's bent over this all the time.
Yeah.
And the pain was just beyond excruciating. The nerve pain, though, was the worst. So I went against my beliefs, and I started taking painkillers. I'm like, okay, I'll do this for a couple of weeks, and then I'll taper off and see what happens. It got worse, even with all that.
Wow.
So now I'm starting to get alarmed. I got a MRI done end of July, and I brought it right to the doctor, my doctor in Long Island, Dr. Verma. He looks at it. He goes, you need to be in surgery like this week. He goes, your nerve, there's no circulation going to your legs with the spinal canal. The nerves are so cut off. There's three herniations, two are bulging. And there was no way around that. He goes, I need to clear out these nerves. I need to fix it up. He's not a big surgery guy either. So a couple of days later, I was in surgery, August 3rd, 2018. They did a laminectomy, discectomy. They cleaned it all out. It was supposed to be 2 hour surgery. It wound up being 5.5 hours. That's how fucked up it was. Now his theory on this whole thing is that years of abuse, doing concrete training, football when I was a kid, my muscles were supporting it.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how the body works. That support system gave out. And finally it was like, fuck you. You know, you could live with herniations, as you know. Most yeah. people have herniations. They don't know. It's just a matter of how severe it is and when it comes out. When it comes out.
Yeah.
So that happened. And, yeah, dude, I had the surgery. Definitely needed. I was out of the gym again from last August. Tried training early this year. I got scared.
Yeah.
June, I really got into the training.
Okay.
Then I was an asshole. I was a complete asshole because what? I was in the gym. Gym. You're going to laugh at this. I had 120 in one hand and 125 in one hand. And I didn't realize it because there was no markings on it. I'm counting the plates like an idiot. Yeah. I press it two times. I'm like, what the fuck? And mind you, I'm getting into it. I'm pissed. I come up. As I'm coming up with the bench, I launch them.
Yeah.
And then I go pick up the 120s without squatting down. And I felt something. Dude, I felt it in my back. And I'm like, fuck this. It's good. I press it. I finish the workout. Next day, I couldn't walk.
No way.
Now it's bad. Yeah. And that went on from June to August. August, it started clearing up. Thank God. Got to the MRI. It's still fucked up. It is what it is, but it was a good enough scare. There was a tear in one of the discs.
Yeah.
Started with therapy. My doctor told me, he goes, Dom, if you're in pain right now, it's fine. He goes, it's not bad enough. Get back in the gym tomorrow. You need to get back in the gym. You need to get your muscle back. You need to strengthen yourself. Work with your physical therapist. And ever since then, it gets tight here or there.
Yeah.
But thank God it's been
okay. Do you think you're ever going to go back to squatting six plates?
No.
Four plates. Like, will you ever go back to squatting heavyweight, or are you just like, I'm not going to do that no more? I don't need to. I already have good quads.
So the egotistical squatting lover inside of me says, yes, let's definitely squat. But the smarter side of me and those around me say, the muscle memory is there. You built great quads. You can do it with leg extensions, hack squats, leg press, just like Dorian did.
Yep.
Just like a lot of guys did. Your muscle memory is there. Your foundations, and you can build on that. So there's a lot of ways around it. You know, can I squat though? Yeah, probably some lightweight over time. But the days of doing all that weight, no way.
Yeah.
So the one thing that does concern me though, while we're on this, is my legs haven't really been growing like they used to.
But they don't need to.
They're very atrophied from the nerves being cut off.
Oh, okay. So you're worried about trying to get them back?
Yeah. So I'm more worried in my head because I'm an overthinker. But my physical therapist and I'm training with Oscar right now. They say, listen, the nerves got to adapt. They were cut off for so long.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to start training the new fit next week to start waking them up a little bit. I'm seeing my physical therapist. Yeah. It's just a matter of keeping the discs healthy, making sure the nerves are clear. And just letting the nerves adapt again, because there's no nerve damage, because it's not atrophy to the point where it's like
normal
muscle. Just shrunken down because of inactivity and the nerves being cut off. So it's just going to take a little bit of time, but I am feeling great. I am training 100% again. I am eating. I'm getting back to my old size little by little. And I am going to compete again.
You strike me as, from talking to you this little bit, as somebody who looks at bodybuilding in a very mature, methodical way. It seems to me like coaching is almost more important to you than competing. Is that true, or is that just what I'm getting from this interview?
It is. And why is that? Is, listen, I love competing. It's in my blood. I want to try to be the best competitor I want to be. But now I have clients who pay me money. I have people that rely on me for their goals, either the competitor or non-competitor. And my competing will never take over that. But one thing is, too, is even though when I was 100% bodybuilding and prepping, I always became more productive. When I'm in a routine and I'm focused and I'm training 100%, I don't really get tired. I look okay. I look for more things to do. It's just how I am in my nature. It's odd. A lot of people want to like that. But, you know, it'll never overtake my clientele. But I can easily balance it both. You know, it's not like I said, I was doing concrete and going to school when I was a kid, still bodybuilding.
Well, no, I don't say it because I don't think you can balance it. That's not why I say it. I say it because most guys that coach because they're trying to supplement their bodybuilding dreams. Whereas for you, it sounds like you kind of been doing it because you liked it ever since you were 16. And now it's become more of a passion for you than actually competing does. It's from the sounds of it anyway. It sounds like you actually have a real passion for coaching, and it's not just something you're doing to like make sure you can buy all the food and get on stage and all that shit. So is that kind of like an accurate way to look at it for you?
That's 200% accurate because, like I said, these people invest in me and I invest myself in them as long as they're serious. I'm not taking their money to pay for GH like a lot of people. I'm not starting a prep saying, hire me to do this. Yeah. These people rely on me. And I know what that's like to pay somebody and have a goal and rely on them to help me achieve that goal. So it will never overtake my clients and, you know, my coaching. My coaching is about them. It's not about me buying nice things. It's not about me being able to buy more supplements as a bodybuilder, super supplements as a bodybuilder. That's number one.
Yeah.
My competition, number two. And that's it.
What if you do get on stage, when do you hope is a realistic time for you?
So hopeful is next fall.
Okay.
Because I want to be 2016 was a disaster.
Yeah.
But when I come on stage, I have to be on my absolute best. Win, lose, or draw. I always like to compete to win. But I have to show everybody, okay, and for myself, this is me at my absolute best. I beat all my best physiques. And whatever happens from there, happens from there. So hopefully, you know, we'll see you next fall.
You you said something about a motorcycle, and I've seen a lot of posts of yours on a motorcycle. And I am a motorcycle wannabe. I've wanted a motorcycle. I love cars. Okay. I love cars, and I've wanted a motorcycle since I was like fucking 15. But it's always been a fear for me because I don't want. I'm just like, if I get a motorcycle, I'm gonna fall off it, and I'm gonna get injured. So I just have never gotten one, even though I'm so interested.
Mm-hmm.
Your whole theme seems like you have a biker theme. I mean, even back to the backdrop behind you, like the logo has a biker feel to it.
Yeah, right. The rockers on it. Yeah, they call those rockers.
Yeah. So are you like actually part of a motorcycle club, or you just like to ride?
Yeah, no, I love to ride. I've been riding since I was 18. Started on little stunt bikes and ATVs that my friends told me how to ride on. I ride a Harley. I can never ride sport bikes.
Yeah.
I actually have a Dyna. And yeah, I'm actually a vice president of a motorcycle club here in Brooklyn.
Are you?
Yeah.
Is it like a, I don't know, obviously you can't divulge. Is it like a hard ass biker club, or is it just like a bunch of guys that love to ride?
No, it's not like a riding club. It's a motorcycle club. But, you know, it's just, our thing is too, is, you know, you got these guys who put patches on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they try to be something they're not. They try to act like tough guys. That's not us. We're all men. There is a tight brotherhood between all of us, and that's true. We're all close to each other's family. We all look out for one another.
Yeah.
And that's our rules. That's it. We don't go out looking for shit. We don't go out starting trouble. You know, if you fuck with one of us, we're just men. And, you know, we are a very close-knit group, and that's how we are. But, you know, we all support it. It's family, work, club. A lot of people are a club, everything else. But, you know, we all help each other in our lives, and that's how we are. But riding, I love riding.
What are the rules to getting in your club? If I wanted to be in your club, how would I get in your club?
Well, you have to be at least 21 years old.
Okay.
You have to have a Harley or an American-made bike. It's pretty much the standard rule. Anything over 1,000 cc's. and that's really it. You know, of course, you have to hang around for a while, let us get to know you, and then we would invite you to prospect as any, you know, basic standard motorcycle club.
That's pretty cool, man. I admire that a lot. Whenever I see you post pictures on your bike and you get your helmet on and your fucking face mask and shit, I'm like, it makes me want to go get a bike. And then my wife is like, don't get a bike. You're going to get fucking hurt.
You got to do it, dude. I'm telling you. That's one thing, too, is throughout all those hard times I went through, unless you actually get on that, this is almost impossible to feel. And a lot of people will talk about this, too, especially sport bikes. They're for some people, but not for me. When you get on a Harley and you feel that the power in that thing and you're on the open road, anytime I was fucked up and something was going through my head, like, listen, the gym was always there, but when you get on there and you put your music on or whatever, it was like 2, 3 a.m. sometimes. I couldn't sleep, and I'll get on my bike and just go ride. And
yeah.
You come back a brand new person, dude. I mean, there's just nothing like it.
The only thing I can compare to that is going for a ride in my vet. I go for a ride in the vet. I kind of let it rip a little bit. Come back, I feel, but it doesn't sound like it's the same thing as riding a bike.
You know, some people, like I have a lot of friends that are into the car. Like, I'm not much of a car guy.
Yeah.
But they get that feeling. But when you're on that bike and it's just, and that wind's hitting your face and you just got like everything around you and you just feel that speed. And like I said, it just clears your head totally. There's no feeling like it.
All right. I'm going to ask you a really stupid bodybuilding question, but part of the reason I haven't got a bike is I can't wear all the fucking leather in the summertime, man. I'd be fucking drenched by the time I got to wherever I was going to.
Yeah. So that's summertime, you know, you're really supposed to wear the leather jacket and everything, but not a lot of people really. I know I don't. I wouldn't be able to do it because I sweat as is with jeans and a t-shirt on that bike.
Yeah.
I mean, especially the Harleys run very hot.
Yeah.
I mean, summertime here, if it's just 90, 100 degrees outside, Sometimes it'll get really hot here in the summer and you're just dripping sweat. It's disgusting, but you don't care. You're on the bike, you know. If you walk into a restaurant, you know, you may stink a little, but it is what it is. But wintertime, you know, I do ride in the wintertime. Our rule is, as long as there's no snow or ice in the ground and no salt, you know, we ride. And that's when, you know, you bundle up and all that. But winter, summertime, we wear whatever we want.
Okay, cool. All right, so on to, I want to talk about a couple of different things. I heard, I can't remember if it was a podcast or a video, I saw you talking about anti-estrogens. I want to talk about gear a little bit because that's what everybody wants to know about. So I've always had a little bit of a, I don't know, I'm not as familiar as I'd like to be with the anti-estrogens. So I want to start there.
Okay.
What is, okay, so to my knowledge, I don't want to cut off my estrogen in the off season. I want to maintain, I want to have a little bit of estrogen production in the off season to maintain growth. Mm-hmm. So I'm always like, okay, Nolvidex, not Arimidex. Mm-hmm. Where do you explain to me your philosophy on anti-estrogens in the off season?
So a lot of people, they're afraid to take something like Arimidex or Aromas in the off season because of the reason you said, muscle growth, such and so forth.
Yeah.
Usually Nolvidex doesn't stop the conversion. It may stop it at the receptor site, correct?
Yeah.
That's the thing. You want to stop the conversion of it. And you can do this in a healthy way without crippling your lipids and your joints and all that stuff. Arimidex or Romazin is usually my go-to. A lot of people, most people that I work with respond to Arimidex great. It's easy to control. It's easy to feel out. You don't need a lot of it in the off season, of course, depending on your doses. But two, people forget that if you let your estrogen get out of control, it does affect the heart and the brain. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that. And of course, your lipids and all that, you do need to have estrogen in there to keep your healthy cholesterol, your joints and whatnot. So I'm always in the off season, especially if you're on, you know, moderate to heavier cycle, you should be on an Arimidex or Aromas. And of course, depending on your blood work and keeping it within the healthy range. You don't want to crush it like you said.
Let's say you're on, I think an average cycle for a lot of guys is 750 to 1,000 milligrams a test. So let's say you're in that range somewhere. What would be a proper dose for Arimidex?
It depends on the person too. Like you get some guys that can take, like me, for instance, I need a milligram a day of Arimidex at 750 to 1,000 milligrams a test because I am an estrogen monster. I had severe gyno when I was 19. It was insane. I mean, you see it in the off season. Like I try to keep it at a milligram every other day and I just try to like whatever, but that's why I get really soft too. Like you notice my lower stomach, but it's whatever. As long as my levels aren't too high, my cholesterol is good. It is what it is. So usually about a milligram every other day is where I try to keep people at most in the off season, depending on the person. You may get somebody that doesn't really convert. Like I have a client, he doesn't really need to take much. He may take half of Arimidex twice a week or once a week. It just really depends on the person. But I usually like to stop the conversion totally and, of course, see what the levels are.
Yeah.
Keep it at that. You know, I don't want to rely on the Nolvidex 100%.
See, I said the thing about the Nolvidex because that's what my thinking is now. But previously in my career, I was a big Arimidex advocate and I was taking about a milligram a day. And that's because I'm like you, I feel like I produce a lot of estrogen. I had a lot of gyno when I was younger and all that. So I was doing a milligram a day. The reason I stopped mainly is my good cholesterol was always super low. Mm-hmm. And I felt like my HDL was connected to my Arimidex use.
100%.
So that's why you go every other day. You're trying to maintain a better HDL level.
Exactly. So the one thing too is like, I'm very big with natural supplements as well. Okay. A lot of people look at them and they laugh at them, but they don't realize how powerful they are. Why wait for problems to arise to fix when you could prevent them? You know, you have supplements like a good quality fish oil, citrus bergamot, you know, all the everything that Dante puts out and whatnot, that you can help prevent these things. You can keep the HDL up. Plus two, cholesterol levels are also linked to what you're putting in your food.
Yeah.
You know, high carbohydrates, sugars especially, it's going to make it worse. Your triglycerides are going to go up, LDL is going to go up, but the HDL, of course, depending on the person, you can keep that up with the natural supplements, but the Arimidex every other day shouldn't drop the HDL that low, at least from what I see with my clients.
Okay. It's funny. You just said that the carbohydrates are going to make your triglycerides grow up and your LDLs go up. I don't think a lot of people make that connection because whenever people think LDL, they think fatty steak, they think eggs, whole eggs, they think cheese, they think that kind of shit. They don't think of carbs as a problem with your LDLs. So is that where, if somebody comes to you and they have a high LDL or a bad ratio, is that one of the things you do is lower their carbs?
Well, it depends on what they're taking in too. It also depends on what they were on before, what they're currently on, how much food they're taking in, Are they, do they have any extra sugars in the diet? Are they cheating a lot? All that stuff. So I know for me personally, I actually worked with George when I was 18 going to 19.
George Farah.
Yeah. And I wasn't on anything crazy. And I remember, but my carbs.
Did he promise you you're going to win the Olympia?
No, not at that time. Actually, okay. he promised me that I was going to look like Branch Warren when I was 18 the day of the show. So.
I'm sorry. I got off track there. Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
And I remember that was the first time I see my LDLs really spiked up, but I wasn't really, I don't even think I was on anything at the time, but I remember my carbohydrates were sky high with him. And yeah. He said, it's carbs. And that's when I started making the connection. But two, when you research and you see a lot of people that are taking in a lot of shitty foods or super high carbs, depending on your person, starchy carbs, and mainly sugars, those LDLs go up and those triglycerides can go up.
Yeah. I actually noticed that a high carb diet can also affect your kidneys, because a lot of people point to protein when they point to their kidneys. They're like, well, your protein's too high, you should lower your protein. But I actually lowered my kidney scores, like my creatinine level, and increased my GFR by going on keto. So I don't know if you've noticed that with any of your clients. Because what happens is, what I read was that the nodules in your kidneys, like the filtration, I guess, system, for lack of a better term,
okay,
can become clogged from having too much sugar in your diet.
Well, I can see that. So I haven't read that, but I can see that. Because think about it, high starchy carbs and sugars are very inflammatory, right?
Yeah.
They can wreak havoc all over them. Your fatty liver,
yeah,
heart, kidneys, pancreas. I mean, they can destroy you. So I can see that. The one thing too I seen, like for instance, I actually had somebody that signed on me. He begged me. I actually took a chance. Mm. And actually, I have to give him credit. Dante helped guide me along. And this guy worked with two coaches and he came to me. His GFR was 32. Creatinine was got ungodly sky high.
Yeah.
And I took a chance, dropped the protein down to little to nothing. So listen, you got to stop training. You do a little bit of cardio. However, the carbs are moderately high, I have to say, but we kept it as more complex carbs. That is what I do have to say.
Yeah.
A little bit of fruits here or there. And of course, a lot of healthy fats though.
Okay.
Of course, we're leaning away from things that are higher in potassium, because as we know, that can affect the kidneys as well.
Yeah.
But I think too, the keto diet, it's a very anti-inflammatory diet.
That's true. 100%. Yeah.
It's big with people with cancer. But anything with, there's an inflammation in the body, the keto diet most of the time can help.
So the person you're talking about that you helped, where did you get his GFR back to?
He is now up to 73. Okay. Creatinine is normal. And yes, there's no, he actually had a lot of protein in the urine and all that's normal. Dude, I took a big chance with this. And I also sent him to Dr. Thomas O'Connor, just to be a little more in depth.
Yeah.
He put him on a very low dose of lisinopril, 2.5 milligrams every day. And please, nobody take his advice. Go talk to a doctor.
Yeah.
But he's totally normal now. You know, he's done bodybuilding, but he just happened to be alive. He's happy to, you know, because before he had no idea what was going
on. Oh, so he's done bodybuilding. So it wasn't like you were able to kind of correct it and then he like got back to bodybuilding.
No, it's just, that'd be the stupidest thing to do is get back to bodybuilding. From what the doctor said, from what Dante said, you know, he trains, he stays on his TRT dose and that's it. Because, you know, when you damage those kidneys, they're damaged. People don't realize. And you know, especially for a GFR of 32, when every creatinine through the roof and protein in the urine, there's scar damage done there.
Yeah, but if you brought them back, doesn't that mean that it was acute and not chronic?
We still don't want to take the chance.
I see.
We still don't want to. He's afraid to take that chance.
Really?
He was so scared. Yeah, dude. I mean, it was bad. Like I said, even Dante was helping guide me along. He's a very big mentor of mine with the health supplement side of things. And, you know, Dr. Thomas O'Connor, because he was using a lot of gear before with those previous coaches. And he sort of brushed off to the side of the kidney issues. And he came to me. And I'm not claiming to be an expert in healing these things. We took a chance. And you know, I don't really take people on like that. We tell them with a doctor. But we definitely don't want to take that chance. Because it was for 2 years that those levels were getting worse and worse, he said.
Wow. So when you say guys are coming to you taking tons of gear, what do you consider a high amount of gear? Can you give me a number on that? Like, can you give us a ballpark?
Yeah,
of
course. Let's see. Of course, like, it depends on their level of competing and stuff like that. But this guy was on 1,200 milligrams of test, which is at his size, which is normal. But it was 800 milligrams of Tren.
Oh, shit.
100 milligrams of Anavar, 1,000 milligrams of EQ, 100 milligrams. Like, it was like, listen, I'm more big into stacking things, but when the doses were like sky high like that,
yeah.
And this coach knew he had kidney issues on the rise.
Yeah.
It was just amazing. It was just crazy. But people taking 700, 800 milligrams of Tren. I've had somebody come to me that was taking 1,500 milligrams of EQ from a previous coach. Just crazy, crazy shit. I'd rather see somebody take a little bit higher higher test than any of this other stuff.
Yeah, I agree. You know? My philosophy on it is your test level should be the highest number. And it's okay to stack, like, you know, 3-4 drugs. But it's, if you're going to stack, the whole benefit to stacking is you can stack at a low dose. That's, you know what I mean? Thing. Like I know guys who will take 1 or 2 drugs, but they'll take them both in, like, high amounts. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I think you're going to make better gains if you take 3 or 4, but you take them all in a lower dose.
I have to agree with that, especially in contest prep, too, is that everything has a use. You have your DHT drugs, you have your androgens, all that good stuff. Your test is always going to be higher. And all the other drugs, you don't need a lot of. You're not taking them all the time. Your tolerance and receptors aren't that, you know, adapted to them. So you can take all these things, well, a few things, with all different uses, DHT, androgens, all that stuff at a lower dose and then be effective.
Yeah. What do you think your coaching style is? Like, when I look at Chris Aceto, we all know, like, Chris is known as the carb and protein guy, and Meadows is known as, like, a little bit higher fats and, like, carbs around your workout. Like, Chad was always known as, like, a carb cycling, like, heavy, heavy carb cycling type of person. Mm-hmm. Do you have a thing, or are you just, everything's catered individually?
I have none. When it comes to nutrition, I have none. And where that comes from is I've worked with all the top coaches, put a disclaimer, I don't copy anything they have me do. Unless I fully understand and know how to apply something, then I do it, especially to somebody that's paying me. I have no style. I just take somebody that comes to me, they give me X, Y, and Z. Whatever my brain comes up to, I give it to them, I tweak it from there. No nutrition plan has ever been the same. I don't have a style. Some people may need carb cycling. Some people may need to be higher carbs the entire time. Mm. Some people need little to no fat. Some people need moderate to higher fats. It really depends, and especially what the situation calls for, because the body adapts. You need to know how to make those changes and how to make those changes, when to make the changes, how to make those changes, and such and so forth.
Okay, so I agree with you there. Like, if somebody comes to me, they're always going to end up getting, like, after the first 2 weeks, everybody's diet is different because everybody's body is going to react differently to what you give them. Mm-hmm. But for me, the initial diet, I have a set plan in mind. Like, I kind of feel like I use a little bit more fats than most people. I kind of put more carbs. I really not adopted John's system, but I feel like I learned a lot from John. So that's kind of a little bit my style too.
Okay.
So do you have, like, when you first give somebody their diet, are they always all different, or is there kind of a plan in mind before?
They are always all different.
Really?
And I wish I could even tell you my thinking behind that is, I look at their pictures, I look at the questionnaire they sent me, what they're currently doing cardio-wise, drug-wise, diet-wise, all that stuff, any health issues they may have. And I think to myself, do I need to maybe make them more insulin sensitive, lose some fat? Maybe we can start off with higher food, moderate food, higher fats. Whatever my brain comes up with, I just write it, send to them, as long as I follow it, and I tweak from it. It may totally change. It may not change at all. It may be tweaked. It's, every diet is always the same off the bat. And I wish I could say where my thinking comes from. It's just whatever my brain computes based off these pictures and what they tell me.
Okay. Okay. What is the... Is there a Miss Cardone? Are you married? Or you have a girlfriend or wife or anything?
No. I'm single.
You're single?
I have 2 dogs and my kids. 2
dogs. So was anybody there for you? Like, was somebody there for you to help you turn pro? Or was it kind of just you and your friends and, you know, your coaches?
I mean, I had girlfriends, of course, throughout the years. But I always like to do things on my own. I always like to cook for myself. I mean, then again, none of them even volunteered to cook for me, but that probably wasn't good. You know what I'm saying? that's a whole other topic. But I always was like, that was another thing too. I never liked dating competitors. I couldn't do it. You know, if they like to work out, great. This is my world. You have your world. I have my world. Let's talk about each other's worlds. And that's it. You know, I always cook my own food. I always went to the gym on my own, all that stuff. Nobody really, of course, my friends, my close friends, and my dad was my biggest supporter.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, girlfriends, stuff like that, no.
there's got to be, I agree with you, there has to be a separation a little bit. Like my wife is in the industry, but like on the back end, like she does like research, marketing. She's done some writing, like editing, stuff like that. And she goes to the gym here and there, but it's not, she's not in that world. Like she did a couple shows a long time ago, but like, I agree with you. If it's not that it can't work, but just for me, I prefer to have my own, like, this is my life. Like you said, this is your life. This is what you do. And kind of, we meet in the middle somewhere. And I feel like everybody's just happier that way.
That's how I am.
I feel like it's hard to, when you're trying to get ready for a show, I feel like if your girl is trying to get ready for a show at the same time, there's just too much going on. There's too much tension. And it's like, it's too much selfishness.
It's like, yeah, see, that's the thing too. It's like with me, I don't really get like tense before a show. Of course you have your moments, but I always hold it in. But like with past girlfriends too, like I couldn't imagine like both of us being tired at the same time. Oh, you have to do cardio. You have to do cardio. You have to eat. You have to eat. You have to train. You have to. I'd rather than eat a cheeseburger in front of me, and I eat my food. I know it sounds weird, and you talk about your day. I talk about my day, and they're totally different. And we speak about each other's thing, and that's it. Just for me, I just like, I don't know. It's like I love bodybuilding. I love everything about it. But if I'm with somebody, you know, listen, if they work out and they eat clean, cool. But competing-wise, this is my thing. If you want to support me, great. If not, whatever. But I always like having my own little bubble to be in.
Yeah. What's next? What's next for Dominic Cardone? Are you going to just, is this the coaching thing going to be your business forever? Or do you have other plans to do bigger things with it? Like, or, you know, is it just competing and coaching for now? Or do you have other dreams that you're trying to get into?
I have, of course, other dreams. I'm still trying to figure them out. Coaching was going to be number one. Competing, of course, I said over the years I'm making a comeback, and my mind wasn't there. Obviously, I could just say that before, but now it's for real. I'm definitely getting back into competing for myself, to lead by example to my clients, and of course for my mom, because she wanted to see me be successful as a pro. But in terms of like business and stuff like that, coaching will be number one. I do want to get into real estate within the next year or two, start finding more things to invest in, because I do want to have a family one day. You know, I want to get married. I want to have kids. And of course, they're going to have to, you know, learn how to earn things. I also want to make sure we're in a position that, you know, I can provide for them and everybody can be comfortable and whatnot too. Because I've learned that tomorrow isn't promised. So instead of thinking about now, competing now and money now, I want to think, you know, 5, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, hopefully I'm still here. You know, like I said, you never know what could happen tomorrow. So I want to attempt to be prepared for whatever's to come.
Yeah.
You know? But I would like to get into like real estate and, you know, that's really, that's in my mind right now, is the clientele and real estate and preparing for the future. And that's really what's in my head.
I don't want to keep you too long. We've been going for about an hour now, but I want to ask you a couple questions about competing, just because I know we didn't get into too many X's and O's. What do you think, and it doesn't have to be actually just competition, it can be off-season stuff too, but what do you think is the number one mistake your clients are making, or not your clients, but when people come to you and they're having problems and they can't get their shit straight, what is the number one problem they're having? Is it they're cutting calories? Is it they're taking too much drugs? Is it they're relying too much on the drugs, or not consistent enough with the diet? Like, what is a small set of plans you can give somebody to keep their shit straight?
Do I have to give one?
No, give a combination? No, you can give a bunch, because people are probably writing this down.
I'm gonna give a whole outline of what I learned for myself and my clients. Number in no order is, like you just said, the reliance of drugs over training and diet. The training is what creates the stimulus for the food and the nutrition and even the gear after that. Most people are not trained. Most people think they're training hard and they're not.
Yeah.
They're afraid to go to, like we just said before, afraid to go to failure, all that stuff, afraid to do the compound movements, afraid to work with a few movements and get heavy and hard with them. Most people are not trained as hard as
they can. Okay. Wait. I want to interrupt for 1 second, because you said that before and I wanted to touch on it. What do you make? Okay. I know you said you're a big research guy. So what do you make of the studies that are out now saying that you don't have to train to failure?
Studies could blow me. dude, in terms of research, I want to put another disclaimer on that. I'm not big into like studies, because with what we do, are they only researching my mid-level to higher level bodybuilders and doing all this? Are they researching true bodybuilders doing this? No. So, you know what? Like I say, history and results don't lie. Look at all the bodybuilders throughout past time, including yourself. I know you trained your fucking ass off all the way up till today. And no, like you don't need to train for failure. How are you supposed to achieve that look of looking like you, of looking like these guys that are winning their pro cards? You know, you need to push beyond those limits. I mean, that same goes with the food. Now, it doesn't go with the gear. Of course, you have your times you push with that, but you have to train for failure. But you can't do it all the time. You have to know a true, smart coach and athlete knows when to pull back in these things as well, because you will hit a wall if you do this just repeating day in, day out.
So science is a guide, but not a rule necessarily.
100%. It can definitely be a guide, especially with how things work in the body, how muscles and whatnot, but it's a guide because bodybuilding, if you could put science in a book and all these things say, this is bodybuilding here, and you follow that book, it won't work. Most people won't work. Everybody is different. Everybody's made different. Everybody functions differently. It just won't work. And that's what thing. That's the thing with my coaching is too. There's more than one way to skin a cat. And you know, you have to really learn how to think outside the box, when to change things, how to know when things are adapting, all that stuff. So I'm really not a big science guy. Like I said, it's a cool little guide for certain things. But if you do, if you look at what all the successful bodybuilders on the national level and pro level have done, you're not going to find it in the science books and research. It's not.
Okay, so step one, train your fucking ass off, train to failure. Got that one. What's next?
To the food. Most people think they're eating a lot of food, and they're not. They're just, oh, I'm eating so much. I can't eat no more. Yeah. You won't believe how much you're eating. Well, I'm eating 3 egg whites and some toast for breakfast. For lunch, I have some chicken and some rice, and then I have a shake in between. And then for dinner, I have maybe some chicken and steak with potatoes. How much? I don't know. And you know, that's not that much. That's the thing too. You have to fall in love with eating a lot. But the thing is too, is people say you have to force feed. If you're force feeding, something's wrong. You have to have an appetite there. Like I said, the training creates a stimulus for it. You should get hungry. You're going to want to... Oh.
Sorry, I got to interrupt you because you keep on bringing up questions that are extremely important. So you say if you're force feeding, something might be wrong, right?
Yes.
But you're also telling people they have to eat a lot. Now, the only reason I'm asking this question is I force fed myself a lot through my years because I was just trying to grow as fast as I could. Now, maybe it's the wrong thing to do. Maybe there's a better way, but I feel like when you tell people that they don't have to force feed, they won't eat enough to grow the way they should. So maybe you can elaborate more on what you mean by eat a lot, but don't force feed.
Okay. So I'm talking to like the general, making general statements. So to break it down a little bit more is, for instance, with my clients, digestive health is 100% a big part of things. How are you digesting things? If you're just jamming a bunch of food and your body's not absorbing it, what good is that doing you?
Yeah.
How are you going to grow? You may run into insulin sensitivity problems. I don't want to sound complex because I'm a very simple person.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a big, big role in things. How is your body digesting these things? How is it absorbing these things? Is it actually benefiting you? Or are you just jamming this food and you're going to hit a wall? You know, a big thing too is stomach distension and whatnot too. If you're just clogging yourself with all this food and not absorbing, where's it going to go? It's going to sit in the stomach most likely. So the big thing with me too, with my clients, is if they're not hungry, I need to make them hungry. Either maybe add a little bit of cardio, reducing the food, seeing what they're doing with training wise. Maybe they're not recovering. I build up their appetite to where they're able to handle a lot of food.
Yeah.
And they're never really force feeding. What's happening is if they're absorbing it, they're putting this muscle tissue on pretty freaking quick. And humbly speaking, I have to say my clients do progress pretty quickly. And it's not from the drugs. It's from the day in, day out eating. I monitor the eating every week. I don't tell them checking with me once a month. And that's a very big thing with me, digestive health, making sure everything's, you know, running properly and, you know, making sure that food is being used to recover and not just sitting in them.
But how does that person know? It's just confusing, right? Because, how does somebody know? Because I've had clients that are like, I'm stuffed, right? But then you reduce their food. Or you change their, manipulate their food, maybe remove some fats or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then their weight just plateaus. They don't gain any weight. They don't feel any bigger. Like, oh, I don't feel as strong this week. So you try adding more food back in and they're like, oh, I'm stuffed. Where is that line where you're like, okay, I'm feeding this person enough food, but they're not force feeding.
So that's the thing too, is one, a lot of people don't realize that how your food tastes could impact how hungry you feel. So I know it sounds weird, but if your food, if you put the effort into making your food taste good, you're going to want to eat it most of the time.
That's true.
If you, most people, oh, I'm sick of it, I can't eat, I have no appetite. Okay, but you have 5 ounces of chicken in this meal, like 100 grams of rice. What are you talking about? You give them a burger, a double burger, and a large fry, they're going to eat the whole thing. So that's sometimes this too, is how your food bland? Are you making it taste food? Okay, maybe it does. But one thing I do is I will lower the food for maybe a few days, a week, a little bit of cardio, and get things going. Yeah. And then I'll slowly creep the food back in. And then usually metabolism is running faster. It's like adding wood to a fire. You're adding more carbs in. It's going to usually make it go a little higher. And most of the time, it does work. But the appetite, like I said, the taste of food does impact appetite. I know it does for me personally. That's why my food needs to taste good.
Yeah.
No, you want to look forward to eating. You know, if you're eating 5 to 7 times a day, you want to look forward to it, you know? Yeah.
Okay. So step two, don't be a bitch. Eat your fucking meals. Okay. Step three.
Three, don't rely on the drugs. And that's going to lead to another point. You know, maybe I'll just title for point three. Don't rely on the drugs, because if you're not training hard, you're not eating, the drugs aren't going to do shit. It doesn't matter as much as you take. It doesn't matter how good your stuff is. It's not going to do anything. Yeah. You can get away with lesser amounts of gear if you're training and eating 100%, because the drugs are creating more protein synthesis, be able to store more glycogen, all that stuff. The training is creating the appetite for the food. The drugs are helping you recover from these workouts. So the over-reliance on drugs is becoming a very big thing. There's so many people that come to me, and the first thing they say is, oh, what's your philosophy on drugs? Well, I'm taking X, Y, and Z. Okay, taking X, Y, and Z. What's your diet like? And they don't have any.
Right,
there's no structure. Yeah. How are you supposed to maximize what you're doing with all these drugs if your eating's not there, you're not training hard?
Yeah.
You can't. And you're only burning out receptors.
Can I tell you, it's really interesting. In August, I sent Dante my blood work. And I said, can you give me a hand? I don't like the way this looks. And the first thing he said to me was, I want you to get rid of all your gear. You're only allowed to take 300 milligrams a week. And two, I use a GH. That was it. I'm still on that same protocol. I feel fucking great. I'm 285 pounds. I squatted 4 plates with chains last week, which is heavy for me. It's not 6.5 like you, but that's a heavy weight for me. And I'm benching 3 plates pretty easily. Like, I feel great, but I think sometimes we get caught up in the numbers more so than what actually feels good. You know what I mean? Like, I was always the guy who was like, I need 1250. I need 1250. I got to have 1250. That was my, like, that was my magic number. Mm-hmm. And I thought if I used less than 1250, I couldn't make any fucking progress. And I'm at 300, which is like a little over a TRT dose. And it's been fucking over 3 months now, 4 months almost. And I feel great. So it's like, I agree with everything you're saying. The food and the training matter more. And I think guys get lost in thinking the numbers are what matters more so than just, it's only supposed to amplify what you're doing.
Correct. It's like a supplement.
Yeah. We're not using it to build. We're using it to recover from what the shit we did in the gym. And I'm guilty of it too. That's why. So I'm just kind of telling a story that, like, fucking even pros sometimes have that, like, mindset where more is better. But it's kind of like I'm learning through my own trial and error that you don't have to. And now, you know, me and Luke talk about it too on our show. You know, Luke's like at 750 and Luke's like, you know, guy squats fucking 7 plates and benches 5. Like,
I experienced it myself.
Yeah.
And I really learned about it when I started working. Cedar was doing my diet in the off season of 2015, going to New York Pro.
Yeah.
And that off season, I remember I went to him. He goes, okay. He goes, we're going to go down to 200 milligrams of test and some HD for 6 weeks. I'm like, I'm getting ready for New York Pro. How are we going to do this in my off season? But I did it. I did it. And I was training with Oscar. So I know I was getting the most out of my workouts, but he was feeding me a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Did I get fat? Yeah. But I was still growing. So we did that. Dude, I never cared about that. So we did that. I'm like, wow, I feel fucking great. I'm making progress. Yeah. I was getting stronger. So then it was time for the cycle. And then it was 500 milligrams of test and a whopping 200 milligrams of EQ a week. So I'm like, like, all right. I'm like, I guess we'll see how this goes. Yeah. And I did it. And I went up to 275 that offseason.
Yeah.
And was I soft? Yeah, but dude, I mean, 6 weeks out from the New York Pro, I was 249. I was in damn fucking good shape. Yeah. I was my strongest offseason. I was my biggest. I felt the greatest, and I didn't really need a lot of shit. And that's where I really learned that you don't need a lot. But I will put another disclaimer on this, and I keep saying that word, is our genetics aren't like most people. Most people will do that, and some people do need them more than the others.
Yeah.
Some people will see results faster or slower than others, but you know, genetics do play a big part in that.
Of course.
But I think a lot of, like you just said, people definitely get caught up in the numbers big time.
There's definitely a caveat to it. I mean, look, I'm at 300 milligrams a week, but I'm also already fully grown. Like, my genetics are maxed out. Like, I'm not going to get any bigger. Like, this is it. So it's like, I don't know if 300 would have worked when I was 25.
No, trying to build up, no.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, trying to build. But now that I'm already there, I'm like, okay, maybe I don't have to fucking do all this crazy shit, because I'm already at the you know, I go on stage at 255. Like, I'm not going to go on stage at 280 and 290. Like, that's never going to be me. So no, maybe
that's how, I don't mean to interrupt you, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, go ahead.
See, that's how I explain it to people too. It was like 300 milligrams of testosterone levels are over normal, definitely.
Yeah.
So if they're over normal, why can't you maintain what you have and get stronger if you're eating and training and paying attention to recovery and you're on a little bit of GH too? And plus two, can you make gains when your testosterone levels are elevated on 300 milligrams if your genetics are good? Not overnight, but it's good, you know, you will
still get there.
Time. Fuck yeah. Especially if, you know, you already have that muscle there. That's how I explain it to the people.
Yeah.
You know?
You said something else that triggered something in me, that triggered a thought. Do you think I feel like guys are staying lean now because of Instagram, and they're not actually getting as big as they, I don't know how much, like how heavy you get your guys in the off season, but when I did my own off seasons back in the day, I used to get heavy. Like, I would get like 40 pounds over contest weight, sometimes 50. But I didn't care, because I was putting on 10 pounds of stage weight every year. You know what I mean? So it didn't matter to me. I didn't care. I was like, whatever, as long as I'm making the gains at the end of the day, I don't give a shit if I'm fat. Do you think guys nowadays are too concerned with what they look like on Instagram, so they don't want to put on the weight?
100%. Like, one of my guidelines is that most people, I would like to see somewhat of an outline of their abs.
Yeah.
Somewhat. They don't need to be thick. They don't need to be chiseled in or anything like that. Somewhat of an outline. Right. I don't want them to get a gut like I always did. But you know, people definitely try to stay way, way too lean, because again, history doesn't lie. From your experiences, look at the guys in the '90s, early 2000s, mid 2000s. These guys got fairly soft in the off season.
Yeah.
And how are you able to put all that food in without getting somewhat soft? Mind you, a lot of people can't, you know, if you, the way I do things, I try to build a metabolism up, let them be able to handle the food, so they stay a little harder than most people would.
Yeah.
Based on how we handle things. But you have to embrace the idea of getting soft, throw a sweatshirt on. You don't got to look at yourself. You don't got to post pictures on Instagram. If you're worried about Instagram, like, this is what Joe Binley says. He goes, post your fucking, get strong and post that on Instagram. Post your lifts. You don't got to be posing all the time. You know, impress people like that. And then when it comes stage time, then you reveal it. You know, you don't got to be fucking posing in the mirror every second and posting pictures of yourself.
That
does hold people back for sure.
Yeah. Well, is there a step four, or we good with the three solid rules?
Yeah, so I'm going to add on to step three, and that is you're going to have to come off your gear. When you get older in age, you do have to stay in a little bit of TRT, especially if you're competing at a higher level. Most people, I like them to come off totally in PCT.
Yeah.
And the reason being is all my coaches made me do it. Most people can handle it. Now, my thinking on it is are you going to recover your testosterone levels right away? Fuck no. It's not going to happen. It takes a long time to do that, especially if you're using these drugs and whatnot. They suppress you beyond that. But the thing is, too, is you fully have to clean out, especially if you're not genetically blessed. Yeah. You have to get the most out of what you're doing. You have to come off. You have to let your body take a breather from these things. And plus two is, when you do this, I feel like your body somewhat wakes up. So later on, when you want to have kids, when you want it to come back, it's a little bit easier than all this just continuous over and over. So a big thing, and what I always made tremendous amounts of progress in myself, was coming off and running these PCT drugs, taking the break, eating, and then hopping back on, and then you just explode. You're fully cleaning out those receptors. You're letting your body take a break, health-wise, mentally-wise, receptor-wise, and, you know, so you can revamp things, and then when you come back on, you should respond way better than you did before.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Actually, up until I was about 35, I came off twice a year, every year. like all the way off, not like a little bit of tests here or there. I mean, like I would come all the way off HCG, Clomid, Novadex, run that stack. I would come off for like, it got shorter over time, but originally it was 8 weeks, 12 weeks. Then it became 6 weeks, mm-hmm. sometimes four. And it wasn't until I hit 35 where I realized, okay, I can't really go off. Like my test production is just gone. So my off became like 200-300 milligrams a week. That was my off.
Yeah. And that becomes normal.
Yeah. But I totally agree with you. When I was younger and I was, I guess, I don't know if you want to say healthier, but my test production was a little more normal. Mm-hmm. I would totally go off. But the thing I always have with issues with clients is when they go totally off, they stop eating. I feel like their eating suffers and everything, and their weight drops. Mm-hmm. And what I try and tell people is, if you go off at 220, your goal should be to keep eating as much as possible to stay at 220, so that when you go back on, you shoot to 230 or 240. That's how you break a plateau. And I think that's what guys are missing. Like, well, I don't want to go off. I'm going to shrink. I'm like, well, you're not going to shrink as long as you keep eating your fucking meals. Like, you lose 5 pounds of water weight, but like, you're not. So I don't know if you find that when you train your clients, but that's one of the main things I found is like guys don't have the same level of focus when you take away the gear.
150% on a couple of things is that focus that you're talking about. Oh, I don't have the same drive. Oh, this and that. Yeah, okay. You may not have the same edge, yeah. But if you're following the diet and your appetite, so there's no reason why you can't eat your food. There's no reason why you can't train. Can you train as hard? You should try to, but you know, you may have to pull back in things depending on the person. But you have to come off the fucking drugs, man. And that, you know, that one thing too with my clients is that I watch even off season guys. I watch the off season guys as much as I do prep. They will check them every week. Yeah. So if the appetite suffers, I try to fix them. We go back to the steps we spoke about. If they're training and they're eating clean, there's no reason not to have an appetite. But like you just said, you have to eat like you're still in cycle. Think about training like you're still in cycle, and you'll get through it. Will you get a little softer? Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Will you get a little not be as round? Yeah, whatever. Because when you go back on and those hormones fucking spike, you're going to lose that softness. You're going to put on a shit ton of muscle right away, and you're just going to get stronger. And it's just going to be like it never even happened.
That's when guys say, how do you break a plateau? That's always my number one answer, because it's like a boomerang effect. You go off your body, like, but you try and keep it at that weight, and then you just rocket right past that weight when you get back on. And I don't think guys are willing to do the off part. They just want to break the plateau, but they're not willing to like take the break. You know what I mean? That they need to break the plateau.
You hit it right in the head. Is that boomerang? I always call it a slingshot effect.
Yeah.
You come back a little bit, and then it's just going to fucking propel you forward. And that's what happens to me. I spike up to a weight I never hit before.
Yeah.
I don't look that way initially, but then I stay that weight, and over time on the cycle and through that phase, I get bigger and bigger and grow into that weight.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell everybody. You have to come off to give your body that break to make that slingshot effect. Because if you're on all the time, or if you're a younger guy and you're on TRT and you're blasting cycles on and off, you're going to hit that wall, and it's just not going to work the same. You're going to need to use more. And we know what comes with that.
Yeah. How many times a year do you tell guys to get blood work done?
Usually 2 to 3 times a year, depending on the person.
Okay.
It's usually 2 to 3 times. I wait till they're right off, because usually if somebody's on cycle, we know things are going to be skewed. If somebody's on for a longer period of time, then I will have them run it on cycle, depending on how long they're on. But usually right after we see how skewed things are. Usually with my clients, things don't really get too messed up, because most of the guys follow the diets. Proper nutrition does affect your blood work, cycle, the health supplements. If anything is off, okay, let's fix it. Yeah. 4 or 5 weeks later, let's run it again. Okay, we're good. We're going to stay off for X amount of time, and then we'll go on again. Okay. So usually 2 to 3 times a year, I encourage everybody to get echocardiogram if they can. EKG, usually most places always do.
Yeah.
Cardiac CT scan, especially as you're getting more and more into things, if they're able to get it. It's hard to get in the States because some doctors give you a little bit of trouble with insurances.
Yeah.
But all those things are very important, especially into making sure you have the perfect storm is not brewing inside of you.
Yeah. Is there any other rules to success that you want to add to that?
Those are pretty much the general
outline.
Of course, there could be little, you know, yes. things to each. We could go on and on about that.
I know.
General off-season bullet points, we'll say.
Okay, last question about dieting before I let you go. When someone's prepping, are you a high cardio guy or low cardio guy?
Depends on the person, but I will say
generally speaking,
higher cardio.
So you're like, are you a 2 45-minute sessions guy, or are you like a 1 45-minute session?
Oh, it depends. I try to start everybody off. Most people with cardio, I want to do most of the work in the beginning because I don't want to have to crush them at the end. So it could start off with 20 and 20 because I love faster cardio, and then it'll go 30 and 30. Yeah. And then 45 and 45 is usually my max. I don't need to go really fast with any of that with anybody. But the cardio, that's another thing too, is a lot of people afraid to do today is the cardio. They want to rely on drugs. They want to rely on T3 and Clen and crazy science shit to lose fat and whatnot. But history doesn't lie, man. Even Dorian Yates did 2 45-minute a day, and you know he wasn't training too long. Most of these guys did all the high cardio. You know, you're not going to lose muscle if you're taking all these drugs and you're eating. It's just impossible. You're not going to lose it from cardio unless, you know, it's people like, oh, I'm going to get skinnier. No, you're not.
I don't know how I see some coaches, like some clients will post, I only did 20 minutes of cardio a day, my whole prep. And I'm like, how the fuck did that work? You could keep somebody in like a major deficit the whole time they're dieting. Mm-hmm. But I mean, wouldn't you prefer to feed the person and make them do a little extra work?
That's how it's supposed to be, yes. Because if you're feeding them more and they're doing the cardio training, that's how most of my clients grow into the show.
That's right.
Is that, you know, yeah, do I have to crush them with diets sometimes? Yeah, but, you know, we do have our times where we bump the food way up.
Yeah.
But that cardio is just going to get rid of the fat. The training, you don't want to rely on the training to get rid of the fat. It's the diet and it's the cardio. And that cardio, it's you can't, in my opinion, you can't get around it. Yeah. Unless, like, yeah, you are blasting them with T3 and, you know, cooking them with the diet.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. We've been on for a while, dude. I'm going to let you go because I'm sure you have other shit going on, but I just want to ask you before you go, is there anything you want to promote or message you want to put out there before I let you go, man, and kind of let everybody know where to get your coaching or where they could find you, any of that?
Well, first off, I want to thank you for having me on. You know, I've been wanting to come on for a while.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny you having me on here, not to be like a fanboy, but I will be in a way. When I was 16, people get this weird, and I think you were a muscle tech. Yeah. I actually had you as a screensaver on my fucking computer.
You're gonna awesome. Learn
that. So it's weird being on here talking to you, being a pro and talking about all this with you. So I just want to thank you, you know, to have me on.
Yeah.
But if anybody wants coaching, you know, you can go on my website, cardonenutrition.com, or, you know, you can go to my Instagram at IFBB Pro Dominic Cardone. You can see all my client transformations on there. I put up videos once in a while giving tips. You can ask me questions through DM. And that's pretty much it. Of course, you know, we spoke about it, Project AD. They had my back for years.
Yeah.
I've always highly recommended them. You know, those products, they know.
And you got a podcast with them too.
Oh, yes. Oh,
you guys, you guys can listen to Dominic, Justin Compton, and Joe Binley on their podcast.
Yeah. It's called All Business Bodybuilding. We're on Spotify and iTunes. Joe Binley is one of the smartest minds that a lot of people don't realize in this industry, because his knowledge base isn't just bodybuilding. Nutrition as a fucking whole.
Really?
So his dude, if you listen to it, he gets so in-depth about the concepts about nutrition. He can apply them to bodybuilding, non-bodybuilding. That's why all his products are, you know.
What is his background?
In what sense?
Like, where did he get all the knowledge for nutrition? Is it self-taught or is it like?
All self-taught, all research, talking to people.
Yeah.
You know, that's all on him. You know, a lot of his ideas, and I'm going to put this out here for him, with some of the products too, like the Mass Chaser. When his mom was going through cancer, the same cancer my mom has, is he was like, how can I help people in the future? So like the Mass Chaser he just came out with, you know, cancer patients can't eat a lot. So you don't want them to have a mass gainer shake that's full of shit. So that's how he came up with this clean mass gainer with low volume of fluid that people can have easily. So, you know, all these things of diseases. He also has a very big autoimmune disease.
Before you go, I want to ask you, what is the Mass Chaser product? Like, what is that?
So the Mass Chaser product is, a lot of people don't believe it when they hear it.
Okay.
But it's true to label. It's per 2 scoops is 500 calories, 25 grams of whey protein concentrate, but it's the higher end of whey protein concentrate. It's not the garbage that they put in most proteins.
Okay.
78 grams of carbs coming from the P10. Carb product, tapioca starch, and a little bit of dextrose. There's 12 grams of fat comes from MCT oil powder. But here's the kicker of the whole thing. You only need 4 ounces of water for 2 scoops.
What? How does it even mix?
I know it's hard to believe. And you can mix it with a spoon, leave it for 2 minutes, mix it again, and it's dissolved.
Like, it'll be drinkable, not pudding.
Not pudding. It's 100% drinkable.
You've tried it.
Dude, I drink it 2 to 3 times a day. And it's true to label. Everything he has is true to label. He's been designing that product for many, many years.
Yeah.
So like that's like a very, very big out of the box thinker he is.
Yeah.
Most
yeah.
mass games are full of shit. You had to have a big shake. You know, people with bodybuilding don't just have to use it. Say if you're going through an illness where you can't eat,
yeah.
you use something like that. There you go. You know.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea. 500 calories in a 4-ounce fucking glass of water is pretty fucking sweet.
And zero stomach discomfort. Usually, you have something like that.
Come on, now you're lying.
I'm very sensitive to low quality whey protein concentrate.
Yeah.
I put that down. 30 to 40 minutes later, I'm fucking starving. It's not really? Good at masking. Starving. Yeah.
I gotta try this shit.
Tell me, try it.
Maybe we'll copy it when we do our supplement line.
Oh my god! I'm sure somebody's gonna go over. That's if they can figure out how to make it like that. But
yeah, I know.
Right, do the vanilla flavor because what I noticed with the chocolate, like it may give some people a little bit of like an acid.
Yeah.
With the chocolate, just from the flavoring.
Yeah.
So the vanilla is my favorite way to go. You could drink that, and that is about zero bloating, zero nausea, nothing.
There you guys go. Whoever's having a tough time eating, 500 calories and 4 ounces of water, man. You can't beat that shit.
No.
Okay, Dom, I'm gonna have you on again. We'll talk some more shit in the near future, but I appreciate you coming on, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, dude.
Okay, dude, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
All right, brother.